It's the Karma Has Spoken podcast, inspiring conversations with movers, shakers, and entrepreneurs in Southeast Michigan, all from inside a very special trailer named Lucy. Here's your host, Danielle Karmanis.
Welcome back to Lucy, the coolest retro trailer and our recording studio today. You're listening to Karma Has Spoken, and I'm Danielle Karmanis. I was reading a great book called The Happiness Passport, a world tour of joyful living in 50 words. And I was thinking it's kind of what we're doing right here, right now. We're in a trailer taking a tour of conversations with people living their purpose with passion. And we're so lucky to have this time together to listen and laugh and learn. The happiest times of our lives are spent together, and I'm so happy to be sharing this adventure with you. April showers bring May flowers, and flowers always bring joy. Who doesn't love getting and giving flowers? They have a magical impact, and it's a great time to find out what to give, how to grow, and how to make the magic last. Welcome, Farah and Ula from Maison Ferola.
Thank you.
Did I say it right? Ferola?
Ferola, yes.
Okay, so
yes.
It's a combination of your names.
Yes, it is.
Right?
Yeah.
So how did you two come together and start this business?
She's my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're both into creative things, really, in general. And we were just chit-chatting, and we wanted to go to a class, actually, for flowers and just for fun. And then we just were talking about it. Why don't we make this our business?
Kidding. Yeah. So before the class, had you done a lot
with
floral?
To that class.
Yeah. Kidding.
We skipped that class.
And went right to joining together and starting a business.
Yeah, and
okay,
yes.
So that's fun.
I'm a pharmacist. Yeah. She's an occupational therapist.
I know.
We wanted to do something more creative, and we thought it's a good way to try out flowers. And social media is amazing because people, you can post and share, and people like what you do. And we started that
home. Well, you know what? I agree with you, but I would also say social media can be tough if you're not the real deal, right? And you two are the real deal. And what you're creating and what you're growing, I guess I would say, is so special, and it's brilliant. It's really magical. So tell us, what are you seeing with trends? What are the trends in flowers? What are people giving, and what do they like to receive?
Well, people are very excited about the hat boxes, honestly. That's one thing, you know, that kind of made people like what we do. It's the way that we present our flowers. The arrangements are themselves as well, the way we put them together. It's springtime now, so we love using tulips. And do you want to take over a little bit? Just look at the names.
Yeah, like Crispedia, those are the yellow ones. Like rice flower, sweet pea, of course, like spray roses, regular roses. There's frill tulips, which is a very short.
Our favorite. They're tulips with a little frill
on the edge.
Oh, I love those.
And of course, like anemones, anything that is different, not the typical that you see in arrangements, we love to use. And also, we like to put them in our hat box, of course. And it's huge on social media, so it's nice to have that as well.
Is this your personal favorite? What do you love to make?
I love both, honestly, because like I love the simplicity of our roses and our just like simple roses and our hat boxes. It makes a statement. And also, I love using mixed arrangements to have something luscious and full as well.
Mm-hmm. And then I love using anemones. They're my favorites. Mm. And then also ranunculus, because they come in so many different colors. And the color you want, name it, you have it. Like, they're just so pretty to use, and they have a nice texture to them. So we like to use a variety of flowers, and that brings in texture and life to the actual arrangement itself.
I love how much you guys love doing this.
Yes,
that you
we
both
do.
Light up as you're talking about it.
You know what's funny? Like, I moved away from pharmacy because it's so stressful, and I love, you know, doing it for a long time because it's helping people and patients, but I'm doing this, it's so creative, but it's not, it's still stressful when you do events, but I still enjoy it. I don't care. It's stressful. It's fun
like
at the
job.
Same time.
Right.
It doesn't feel like a job. We can spend the hours. Last Mother's Day, we did not sleep for 3 days straight.
I bet you didn't. So Mother's Day, I've heard, is the busiest flower or floral day of the year, right?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
we were, like, falling asleep the last day trying to make these arrangements to get them out. And it was till,
you
know.
And we had help, too. And it was still intense. So.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And it's worth it, though.
It's worth it.
Yeah,
and
it
you
is.
Still, you. I can tell you love playing with the flowers and just creating. So it probably almost doesn't feel like a job for you.
No, and honestly, growing a business also is a very fun part of it, too. It's not just working with the flowers. It's an experience we've never had before.
Right.
And just like every aspect of it, honestly, it's been
great. That makes me so happy that you're having that experience. You know, mm-hmm. so many people don't realize being an entrepreneur, a female entrepreneur, and starting a business, there are so many components to it. It goes so far beyond just creating what you love to create. It's managing people and the invoicing and the selling and the social media. And it's a lot to navigate.
It is. And I think we split it, and she loves doing the social media. I get to do the boring stuff sometimes. But, we split it in a way. She's really good at taking pictures of the arrangements, and she has a talent with that. So she took that over, and I get to do the boring stuff, but it's okay.
No, I wouldn't say that. But I'm thinking how interesting it is that both of you, in your past profession, were really helping people. So through medicine, you were helping people to feel well. And through occupational therapy, you were helping people to feel well. And how now you've transitioned to doing something you love to do, and you're making people feel joy. How you're really changing that life.
Flowers are just amazing, the way they bring joy to people. And even I feel like when you walk in a home and I don't see flowers, and then if you walk in another home and you see flowers, it just brings that joy and happiness. And even in businesses, actually, if you read about it, there's research showing if you walk into a business and you see flowers, they enjoy their experience a lot more and they buy more.
Yeah.
For some reason.
I get
that. There is a connection.
It creates an energy. It brings life into the space. Yeah. What do you think is the best arrangement to bring as a hostess gift?
I feel like a mixed arrangement. Mm-hmm. Like, just so it has different textures, different layers into an arrangement, and that way they get to see it. And it's more like a wow factor. Mm-hmm. It looks fuller and larger as well.
And we did create like a packaging box for these, and it's just so pretty. Like, if you want to walk in with an arrangement,
with a wow,
you should check out our deluxe packaging.
Where do we find it? What is your website?
The company name is onferola.com, and that packaging is just amazing.
Okay. Oh, I can't wait. Where are you on social media? Instagram,
Facebook.
And what is under the business name?
Yes.
Okay. So just search that, and we can find you.
Yes.
Okay. And my last question: what's the best way to make arrangements last?
Well, you have to take care of them.
Yeah.
Don't forget about them. And then one thing is, like, people forget to add water. That's like the basic thing.
You're kidding.
Yes. And I think because sometimes they're in the boxes, and we do bring the boxes, send it with the instruction. So you have to make sure to refresh the water, keep it in a cool place. And honestly, you can add ice just to keep the water cool. Make sure the leaves are not submerged under the water, because that will kind of cause bacteria to grow.
Interesting.
No direct sunlight, for sure. Mm-hmm. That will make them wilt right away. You want to continue?
So I've heard if you don't have plant food or flower food, you can add a little Sprite. Is
you can
true?
Add Sprite.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, my daughter had an experiment in school, and I suggested that she... We did roses in different vases, and we did Sprite, and we did regular water, and we did flower food, and Sprite worked well. The only difference was the water turned yellow. The flower food, it did not.
Oh, interesting.
So, So I think it has more of something in it to prevent bacteria from growing
better.
And
how about roses? Do you need to cut them? You do.
Yes.
Should you do it every day or every other day?
Every 2-3 days, I think.
Yeah.
It allows it to drink water better than
and then
doing
cut it on angle as well. Yeah.
All right. Well, I love talking to you guys. I love what you're doing. I love all the joy you're spreading.
You.
I can't wait to follow you on Instagram.
Thank you.
So thank you for being
here.
Thank
you so much for having us. Yeah. It's an honor, honestly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next guest is pretty much all my favorite things wrapped in one person. Amy Carroll is co-founder of Detroit Soup and CEO of Global Soup. She's also the director of curation and programming at Pony Ride. Has a master's in theology with an emphasis on pop culture, which I can't wait to hear about. She's a DJ, artist, event planner, grant manager, and shenaniganizer. I also can't wait to hear about that. Amy and Soup were recently honored as a White House Champion of Change and also awarded the German Marshall Memorial Fellowship and Red Bull Amfico Entrepreneur. Amy, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for coming over to hang out in my trailer.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I see you found the trampoline in front.
I did, and I used it.
And so let's go out there after it, right?
Okay, perfect.
So what's your trampoline move? Do you have a signature move?
Oh, just up and down.
Oh,
that's all I got. I'm uninterested in trying to do flips. Like, I acknowledge that I hadn't had health insurance for about 10 years.
Oh,
you don't take risks like you used to do.
Don't tell me that.
Well, just, that's the reality of being an entrepreneur is you make sacrifices.
Right.
And right now, like, not paying for health insurance is cheaper than paying for it, which is a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some people trying to work on that.
Right. And yeah, being an entrepreneur, I mean, people, I have such a profound respect and appreciation for entrepreneurs. And I think, I don't know, if people truly understand everything that goes into being an entrepreneur, especially a female entrepreneur. I was talking with our guest who started a florist shop, right? And they were saying how much they're loving the process of learning about running a small business. And I was saying, you know, I love hearing that because people don't realize what's involved in running a small business.
I think kind of going back to maybe even my bio, the pop culture part of stuff is that we view things and we don't see the back end. We see the final product, never the process. And so the process is a lot of more failure than I would think that people understand. And when we complain about prices or we need to tip or things like that, we don't understand that there's a real human behind that who's receiving or not receiving what we're willing to spend. And why price points are where they are not just because, you know, it's one thing when you go to Target where you see this global company. When you're local, you're literally paying for that person's health insurance.
Right.
And you're literally paying to keep the lights on, and you're helping to employ people, and you're helping to, and oftentimes the entrepreneur themselves is taking a loss so that they can pay their employees, or not a loss, but not taking the profit in that year. So it's, you know, you take care of others before you even take care of yourself. And I think that's just a shift the way that we approach how we live every day.
So did you mean to be an entrepreneur?
No, I know. I don't know what I meant to be.
Yeah.
But
do you know now what you mean to be? Or do you feel like you found it? Or do you feel like it's, you're still evolving?
Still evolving.
Yeah.
And I accidentally walked into Detroit Soup, and it collided with things that are meaningful and valuable to who I am and my beliefs and my thoughts about how we connect and exchange every day. And I took a lot of those gifts and talents, were able to massage them into an idea that we kind of inherited from a group in Chicago.
Which is, by the way, pretty miraculous, right? When everything kind of collides perfectly, like all those components, all the people and the pieces and ideas come together in the same place. Because you had just come back from LA.
I was. Right? I did. Yeah. Okay. I had lived in LA. And that's where I got my master's degree. And I wasn't planning on being ever living in Michigan ever again. But my mom died. And then the housing market crash happened. And I was a very broken person and found a lot of hope and peace and quiet in Detroit. And I feel like that's the opposite of how I was taught to believe. But my actions and my experiences challenged the belief.
I mean, it's so exceptional to hear someone say, I found peace and quiet in Detroit. How did you end up in LA?
It's really funny. I had gotten my undergrad degree in youth ministry and Bible, and it was a really horrific experience.
Why?
I'm a woman, period. Right? When we don't value something, and we think that like a whole group of humans need to act X, and instead we're a variety of who we are, what we want to be. And honestly, the church became a safe space for me because my mom had become sick when I was in eighth grade. And so I think I found peace and I found a community, and I was living in kind of like a Peter Pan syndrome. And all I wanted to do was be a youth pastor. But there's a lot of men who said no. And you carry that. And like, I was really sad and I was very depressed afterwards. And there was a pastor out in Grand Rapids that had gone to Fuller Seminary, and I thought if he could do it and came out the other side being like a halfway normal, decent human being and not, I don't...
We can bleep it.
Okay, well, not a jerk.
Yeah.
Then maybe I can too.
So curious about this. So I grew up in Assemblies of God, in the church and the school and all of that. And for me, I had such a process really in my 20s in how to apply my relationship with God. And this is why when I was doing all my research on you, and there's so much I want to cover, and there's so many things you're doing that I'm so excited about. But reading about a degree, a master's in theology with a focus on pop culture and trying to understand what that is, it resonated so deeply with me because growing up in what, for me, I was really the only kid in my school with divorced parents. And I can't say this was everyone's experience. It was a very fear-based.
1,000,000%.
Right. Loving God based on fear. And it wasn't really till I was, you know, living on my own in my 20s. And I always felt, and still do, a profoundly deep connection with God. And that's just my core of who I am. And I had such a hard time in going, but where am I connecting? And when I would read using God's name in vain, to me, using God's name in vain is when people would use God and the Bible as a weapon against you, right?
100%.
And I still start to shake a little bit when I'm talking about it. So as I was reading about you, and I'm very excited to go to Harvard their executive program in theology in June. And it's only for 1 week. It's nothing like what you've done. But I'm so overwhelmed and conflicted with these feelings of excitement to see what I'm going to learn and total almost, I have goosebumps now, paralyzing fear on what if it's like the people I grew up with? What if it's the people who were judging me and telling me because I was a creative kid, I was different and I didn't fit in and didn't accept me. And it was,
yeah,
you know, so to hear that you were looking to, had on this journey to pursue your relationship with God outside of the norm, I am just in awe of it, really.
So much of what you just shared is a lot like my own journey, which is looking back as an almost 40-year-old and looking at my journey just so far. I was lost. I was confused. I had a mom who was really sick, and we used faith as a way to find peace in the midst of so much chaos. I find myself now through who I am and watched myself go through different periods of my life. I need to know stuff, and I need to know how things work. And when my mom was sick, there was a lot of lack of knowledge and let's just do it for the kids. We're not going to explain things. And that was how my parents chose. And I am no longer angry on those choices.
And don't you think you were always a kid who wanted to understand? And with the thing about religion, where so many people use it for comfort in tough times, religion for you as a kid wanting to understand would not have been an open vehicle for you.
And yet I think the belief was it could have been if we really wanted girls too. And I think it's changed since then, but I'm uninterested in participating in that space any longer. That served a purpose in my journey, but no longer is something I wish to participate in any longer. My dad is a pastor at a church in Rochester, and I totally celebrate and support, and we still talk theology. It's not that I don't, my practice has changed. And I think as I hear you share about your experience in Harvard, I think for me, my experience at going to Fuller was I open to go and question every single thing I'd ever believed. And if you aren't, then why do you believe what you believe? And is it the belief that I had when I was 12 and that it has to stay that way and it can never change? Or is it my experiences, my travels, my challenges, my questions allow me to understand a deeper sense of what spirituality and a spiritual practice looks like. I don't know if I have one anymore, but I do because I believe in justice and I believe in love. And I think for me, my experiences at grad school was those two things are so hard and we create rules and laws to make them easier, but then we ostracize, then we don't listen. Because if the church really was about justice and change, we'd see it differently. And I think the church was the first to continue segregation. The church was the continuation, the church that I belong to supported. And there are other churches that aren't that way around women's voices being used. We're human beings. And I don't think it's that, it's very complicated, but not very complicated after that. And I think we keep looking for something to save us when we have to start saving first ourselves. And then I say what I've learned through working on Soup, going to grad school in theology, is the thing that I was taught the most was to give myself away as a woman. And now I'm learning to love myself first, which starts to sound like a commandment that I know, to love my block, because I live in one block and I live on one street and I live then in a neighborhood, which then I live in a city, which then I live in a county and I live in a state and then I live in the US, which means how we create change is only locally. And I think we've given all of our local power away to national businesses, national approaches, thinking that there's a different way, there's one way of doing things. When really, when we start, if we could sit here and talk about all the travels we went on, we'll never talk about all the McDonald's we went to. We'll talk about the unique spaces that the city created for us and that I stumbled into and that I walked into. I go to Starbucks because it's easy to go up and down a street, and I knew, even I didn't know where one was, but I knew on my way over here, I'd stumble into one. I could get my fix because coffee is like my one thing that I do for myself. No matter how much money, little or big, it's like the one little thing that I do for myself. But I'll tell you about Astro and the new bakery that they just opened in downtown Detroit, because that's interesting and that makes place so important. And it's fascinating to me of how fast all of us in Metro Detroit left. And there are so many people we left behind. And then we punished them and said, you can't get home loans. We can't give you access to resources. And, oh, you want a small business loan? We're going to give you three times the interest rates that we would if you lived across the street. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we complicate things through our hate rather than create opportunities and access. And then you got to let it go. I can only live my life.
What I love about your life is I don't believe in coincidences.
Sure.
I think everything happens for a reason.
And agree.
When I hear about your journey and getting your master's in theology focused on, you know, pop culture and then coming back to Detroit and how we were saying earlier, everything kind of came together with the people and the opportunity and the idea all at the same time. And I don't think it was a coincidence that all came to you with you right in the center of it. And so from there, Soup was created. Yeah. So what is Soup?
So Soup is a micro-granting dinner that funds projects that are looking to make a city or community better. So you have four ideators who have 4 minutes to share their idea, 4 questions back from the diners, and then the diners get a chance to eat, share, connect, and vote on what project they think should win the collected door donations, which were $5 when we started. And so a winner walks out with money.
Yeah.
But because we've built community, even in 3 hours, everyone walks away with something.
Amy, the way you've made this process so available. So when I first started researching it, and you know, what is Soup and the microloans, and I thought, okay, where are we going? Are we talking about banks and all of this? And so I was so energized and excited as I was reading about how available this is to the community. And community and trust are 2 words that come up frequently when researching you and Soup, right? And I love that because for you, there's so much that's invested in community and right and trust. And so as I was reading about these microloans, I thought, wait, this is not just about the number. This is about bringing together a community and then taking people with ideas who can present their ideas. They can't use technology to present.
Yeah, that's the one rule.
Yeah, I love that.
Because when we started, we didn't have access to it. And honestly, it became why it's been able to be replicated as often as it has.
Well, it puts a layer between the connection, right? And you're really creating connections between your audience and the presenter.
Yeah, so I'm going to challenge you on some words that you used, only because it makes us think differently about how we participate. You aren't the audience. You're a diner. You're a participant, and you're the funder.
Got it.
You're the funder. I'm not.
Got it.
I created space, and I created opportunity for access for you. Everything that you have that you know can be shared that night.
Okay.
You have all the power in the world, and I think we give it away all the time.
Yeah.
And what I challenge is that when I would emcee the Detroit Soup events, I would say, often when you give money at the door, you're looking to be entertained.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your dollars, but I'm going to give you the power back that you just gave to every 4 presenter up here.
Right.
Whatever experience you want out of this night, it's all yours.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, Amy, it's such a huge shift in thinking, right? For the majority.
But that's based on a hierarchical structure, based on the patriarchy. And I don't mean to use high political words right now, but if I'm a woman and I've experienced all that I had experienced, sadness, self-doubt, a lot of people saying no, why did you tell me no? What about what you believed? Did you feel like I wasn't ready or I'm sharing what I need, but you only heard what you needed to hear? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I also think that in Detroit, we have all the capabilities to solve 4X. Mm-hmm. And I heard it month after month after month of people sharing what they needed rather than being kind versus being nice. Mm-hmm. Nice means I have a solution for you and you're going to absorb my niceness. Mm-hmm. Kindness means I heard you. I had empathy and we're going to solve this collectively. Mm-hmm. And it's a shift of I'm being entertained. I'm being the audience. I'm just here to be a cog in the machine, which I don't think that I am. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you are, that we all have gifts. We all have talents. We all have observations. We have solutions. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we think that I find it fascinating in philanthropy and participating in it. A lot of the problems that we're finding are caused by kind of we give all this money to large corporations. Mm-hmm. Then they say, we're going to choose who makes the change, but we want it our way, mm-hmm. not the way that we hear from the. So I'm just shifting perspective and I'm changing a narrative, and it's from the ground up rather than the top down. And I think that that's the way that we vote, that less than 10% of Detroiters vote in primary elections. And I would say that's not just a Detroit trend. That's a national trend. We talk about this last election like everyone voted, but actually less than 40% of Americans voted, which meant more people didn't vote than did, which means we're allowing a smaller majority to make a lot of bigger decisions and then we're upset that we're not engaged in participating. I also think that churches are dying, both in Europe and in America. So we need to find different ways. to shift.
And that's really what the focus on pop culture is about.
Well, not really, not at all. So my degree in theology walked away asking a question of...
So just tell us what that means.
Yeah. So the question I asked in grad school was, how do we make meaning out of our everyday experiences? And if we're going to go to church, which the church I had grown up with was more of an entertaining, there was a praise band with big lights. And they built a school, which was great. But like, I never... Going down to Detroit to do a mission is already a problem mm-hmm. for me. And the more I experienced that was a problem for me because these are your neighbors. Mm-hmm. They're not a mission. They're just a neighbor, which means you have to listen. You participate. Mm-hmm. You exchange. So my experience in grad school was allowing for me to understand the role of what's next. Mm-hmm. And so as I watched the act of the church, which was supposedly the place that the tent poles of the community. So we have our government, we have schools, we had a church. So the government would take care of X. The church would take care of making sure that the homeless were fed and things were clothed. But we have to participate in that. Mm-hmm. And that now that we have mega church models, which means we leave our neighborhood to go someplace, we're being completely disconnected from the place that we live. Mm-hmm. And so all of those things came into play of what does it mean to be a church? And I thought, okay, well, if I don't participate in that old way,
right,
what is a new way? And a new way is, well, if the church does still exist in our neighborhood, then go to that. But if I think that justice needs to be participated in, mm-hmm. here's an opportunity, which means I used to hear a lot about people talking about the complaints of Detroit, but I always saw people doing something about it, but it's not flashy. Mm-hmm. I have a master's degree, and let's not forget, in theology, which meant I was trained to be a preacher, which means I know how to talk, mm-hmm. as you can already tell. Mm-hmm. We could probably sit and talk for 2 hours if we wanted to.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I know how to communicate my message. I know how to communicate the values. I know how to talk about things. And there's a lot of people who just don't feel their own value and their own worth. And we throw people away all the time, especially women. And guess what? At Soup, 60% of past winners are women because we also need validation for our ideas. We need this permission. Mm-hmm. It's this invisible permission. Is it okay that I'm doing this? How many women start with, I apologize, I'm not perfect, right? What is perfect? What does that mean? What does that look like? How many women are in bad marriages because they feel like this is what they need to be doing rather than living their own truth? And mm-hmm. this is my journey that I've been on. And I don't know if a lot of people would like to trade my life for theirs, but it's just mine. And I'm a fiery, passionate person who really does believe in feminism, which meant it's not a bad word. It just meant I believe in equity. Mm-hmm. And equity comes with, okay, well, if I'm disenfranchised, imagine. And when you start to see the numbers, the disenfranchisement, the church that I had participated in felt like I was going to like told what how to live my life rather than how do we challenge and make things better mm-hmm. for all of us, not just some of us. And when you start to see the numbers, even in Detroit, in the last 10 years, 80% of funding still goes to older white men. Well, I'm not old and I happen to be white, but I'm not a man. So I've asked a lot for funding for Soup and I've got told no a lot because I think there's a lot of myriads of reasons. People want a lot of perfectness. Like, help me understand why this works. I don't know. This thing is a scrappy thing. And if you go and you witness it and you participate in mm-hmm. it, you'll see that it works.
And it works. How much has it grown? How many countries?
So it's in 225 cities have used the model. And I think there's even more than that that I don't even know
about.
And how
many countries?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's on every continent. But there's 75 that have started in the UK and it only continues to grow. The BBC did a documentary and that just shows about like UK media versus US media. And I could tell a story about that, which is the BBC aired the documentary probably 20 times on their 4 different channels at different times of the day. Where in the US, I had been luckily on NBC Nightly News and I had gotten an email from People magazine saying we would love to share your story. But I need to double check with my editor. And the editor comes back and says, you know what? There's too much overlap between those who've watched. And let me tell you, I think it was the day after Thanksgiving it aired. So I would say, oh, I'd been on NBC Nightly News. And I'd be like, oh, I watch it religiously. But I didn't watch it that day because it was the holidays.
Right.
So it's just the way that we think about things, that we think everyone watches this one thing. But we don't. We have too much choice.
Right.
Fine. That's American capitalistic wave, how it goes. And therefore, you make choices of what news you watch. Anyways, needless to say, it's blown up in the UK, and we're starting to even build like an umbrella model for them to get even deeper access to resources, helping ideation change. Entrepreneurism is on an all-time American low right now. And even if you start a business, you're often, because we have such high conglomerates, like they can swallow you up. And so after starting up, you'll have to start again on a new idea, which is great. Like if you're an ideator, that's really attractive. But long-term, we're not able to build businesses that are competitive because of how things get swallowed up. This is a lot that I'm sharing, but it comes all the way back to I need to take care of myself, and I live in one block on one street, and where I live and how things participate. Mm-hmm.
And how about Pony Ride?
I was a tenant at Pony Ride, and then some things went down, and I stepped in and I said, can I help? And so I'm now the director of curation. And so we believe in supporting women and Black and Brown entrepreneurs. And so I curate around that. And I've just had been so involved in ideation in Detroit. And you can see how someone has an idea versus a hobby versus a business. And what I've noticed is that, so Pony Ride was bought in 2011 for $150,000 during the foreclosure crisis, before Dan Gilbert moved into town, when the tax auction was still a really big thing. And Phil Cooley of Slow's Barbecue bought this building and said, we're going to give half market rate rent to entrepreneurs who are creating manufacturing in Detroit or trying to bring this back. And so what we found is that if you tier the rent structure, if you give 50% rent for the first 18 months and then increase it by 25% and then increase it by 25%, so you get to full market rate rent, you have higher business successes. We don't give huge punishments to those who can't pay their rent. We are kind of like glorified landlords, but hopefully better than that, where we create, well, I've been able to help curate a group of humans that are working towards a similar goal, which means we create the space, mm-hmm. which is a lot like soup, and mm-hmm. then get out of the way, which is a lot like soup, mm-hmm. and allow for these collisions to happen in a really beautiful, safe environment, and attempt to document them to show the value of what we've created, which I think any county who sits on real estate to develop and change as their value forgets that the human is more valuable than the building. And so even if you wanted to do it for 5 years, which is what we did, the building just sold for $3.3 million, and we're taking that capital and investing it back into like Pony Ride 2.0, which is a lot of question marks, but is
and
what
is
space.
And how will that change from the original Pony Ride?
I don't know yet. We're working on it right now. The building kind of happened, like we didn't expect it to sell as fast as we did for the amount that it did. And I don't think any of us thought, like, the reason it went up for sale is that it needed over $1 million to get up to code. And it was easiest for us to start over than it would be to try to rehab the space. But we're working on a temporary location that we'll probably be in for a year and a half and figure out, is it space? Do we create a loan fund? Do we create alumni networks? It's just a lot of more questions, because that's the fun of creating something new. And what I've happened to be in always is like spaces that are asking questions that a lot of people are, and we're just putting our actions to the belief. We want things to change, but you can't squint your eyes and not change. Those who have access to power, which most people do, which they don't realize they have, can say, let's make something different. And you don't have to do it with picket signs, or, you know, you can challenge things. But those who own businesses should create better wealth for their workers rather than just for themselves. I think that that's part of a responsibility of an entrepreneur. But those are my beliefs. I'm not asking anyone else to believe those things. It's just through my experiences and through the work, I've noticed that the worker and the entrepreneur have better outcomes mm-hmm. when those things happen.
Which, if there is one success story, do you have a favorite? Or,
well, I guess like along my journey, right? So the first year, 2010, Empowerment Plan,
oh,
they make
Veronica.
The coats. Yeah, right. Like, and this is the stuff people, oh, the coat lady. She is the most successful story, I would say, that came out of the Detroit revitalization narrative, mm-hmm. because it's powerful. She creates coats that turn into sleeping bags. And she had pitched it at Soup, which then 2 weeks later, she pitched to Carhartt, which are now a partner. And she still says, and I have her on record, that it was important that she used Soup. She had been told by a lot of older white men yeah. that she shouldn't do what she's going to do.
Right.
And she pitched that Soup, and there were 75 people in the room that said, we believe in you. Mm-hmm. That's power. Mm-hmm. Right? The belief in yourself changes. The yeah. way that you use language changes. The way that you approach even how you're going to build this business changes.
Yeah.
And I will like to say that thanks to the rest of the U.S., 40% of their funding comes from outside of Michigan. So mm-hmm. that even challenges me to think about Okay, so if that's the most successful nonprofit, what happens when we don't have the ability to go outside or have the kind of thing that comes out of that? So she pitched that soup, Carhartt became a tenant of Pony Ride.
Yeah.
So that's part of like, oh man, Rebel Now, another company that used the same business model, which is hiring women and men who are transitioning out of COTS. So the Coalition for Temporary Shelter. Mm-hmm. So they transition out of COTS and hire them and create jobs and transition them out of homelessness. Mm-hmm. So Rebel Now does the same thing. They consider themselves more like workforce development, and they take graffiti that's fallen off buildings, create jewelry out of it, and use a similar model. And then now they've just graduated out of Pony Ride and going to open up a storefront as well. So those things, like when you think about the journey, didn't happen in 3 months.
Right.
It happened over a series of, you know, almost 10 years.
You know, Amy, you're such a fierce defender and advocate for entrepreneurs and female entrepreneurs
have
and
to.
Social entrepreneurs.
Yes.
You have to, but that's, you know, I can't even think of a word big enough for how proud I am of you for what you do.
Thank you.
You know, I started a program, you know, a nonprofit almost 16 years ago because I was reading about the epidemic of childhood obesity, right? And I looked at my husband, I said, someone needs to do something about this. And he looked at me and said, well, do something about it. I go, okay, I don't know anything.
That's how things change.
That's how things change. I don't know anything. And I surrounded myself with some great friends. And really what we do is we use yoga as a vehicle to take yoga and nutrition to kids. Okay, so now we're 16 years later. We've worked with almost 15,000 kids who have completed 1 hour once a week for 10 weeks. Okay, and these are all kids in Detroit. We've worked with a lot of kids in Detroit public schools. We've worked with a lot of homeless kids who are living in shelters. So for them, that yoga mat is a safe space, right? And we have statistics now that show that they have a marked increase in academic performance. There's a decrease in bullying behaviors, giving them a moment to be still in a safe environment and catch their breath, right? And be intentional. You know, we're always very, very intentional and never judging their circumstances because, you know, maybe their only meals, if they have a meal outside of school, is coming from a party store, right? But helping them understand like, hey, we're not judging you for getting a McDonald's Happy Meal because maybe for them, getting a Happy Meal from a parent they don't see often is the greatest thing that happened to them that year.
100%.
Right. So, but saying, hey, maybe get like, just make sure you're drinking enough water, right? And just giving them an awareness because regardless of who you are, where you're from, we all want to feel happy. We all want to feel healthy. Now, my point in all of this is for so many years, like I said, I didn't mean to start. I'm a creative person. I'm a writer. I love talking to people. I never intended to run a business, right? And I'm a creative, so my ideas, I'm used to, you know, I don't mind hearing no, but I really was taking to heart everything I was trying to do. All I wanted to do was help kids. I felt so deeply, personally responsible and committed to these kids. And for me, where I was in a position, right, where I had, you know, I didn't grow up in the world I'm in now, right? And I grew up very poor, and I recognized I had a lot of resources, right? Even for me, with resources, there were a lot of the people that you're talking about, I mean, my husband never, he was always incredibly supportive, but there were men in the community that would dismiss this as Danielle's yoga thing or want me because I hated developing. I hated fundraising. I hate is a strong word.
So bad at it.
It's a gift.
I'm good at doing it on a community basis, but to build the support for the program, which
it's hard.
I'm building this global soup model and I'm like looking to raise like a $1.6 billion. It's taken me about a year and a half to be in the right mental space to go back out and raise this money because I believe in my message.
You believe in it.
And I know the impact of it. I got the amazing opportunity to go to the UK in October for over a month. And I got to meet with people who started the soup. And I'd say, what's the impact do you think it's created? And they'd almost all of them, it was just like, it's still overwhelmingly now. They'd pause, they'd smile with this like really beautiful smirk on their face. And they're like, I don't know. You just have to be there to understand it.
Yeah.
And soup is that thing. It's about magic of humans.
It's about the magic.
It's about the magic of humanity and beauty and kindness.
Yeah.
It's about being quiet and still.
Yeah.
It's about creating a space where people can set their assumptions at the door and have an experience that changes them.
Yeah.
And they may never come back, but that's okay. We created an opportunity in Detroit where close to 20,000 people have attended one of our dinners.
Yeah.
And then you start to do the numbers. I don't know the impact because I'm working on creating a mechanism to do that. But we think even on the lean end, soup has helped raise over $1 million collectively.
Yeah.
And that's dollars, which means then when you start.
I mean, it's just an extraordinary solution. And like I said, thinking about my own experiences, even with access to resources, but you still have to fundraise. And I would go and I would have to stand in front of these men and say, this is what we're doing. And they would roll their eyes and dismiss it as, oh, that's Danielle's kids yoga thing. And that's never what we were. And it was, even for me, again, with resources, very demoralizing and made me feel like a real kick in the gut, and took me a long time to come back from it. And it just, when someone in a position of authority is telling you your idea is stupid, it is hard to come back from.
It is.
But you came up with such, like I said, an extraordinary solution, because you create an environment. We said, you know what, you don't have to put yourself in that vulnerable, awful situation. We've created a community that's going to support you. One of the things I love is, you know, you have the four presenters, and one is going to win, right? Be voted and win that evening, right?
Yeah.
But the other three, maybe it's not about winning, but the connections they make that evening is even more valuable.
I've been told by a number of people who have presented, both at Detroit Soup and around the world, I'm not interested in winning. I'm interested in hearing feedback
the
on
cultivation,
my idea.
Because relationships.
You can only tell your husband, your brother, your mom, your sister, whomever, your friends.
Yeah.
My best friends, they love me, but they're the ones who've helped Made Soup better, because they're just like, get help, get this, do this, because I don't want to do it for you. They're there for so, only so long, because that's not their passion. It's mine.
But everything about you, your passion, your, you know, theology and pop culture, all of it, you understand the importance, the critical importance of connections, right? And it's really what I fear so greatly in this time of social media, where people aren't making connections, meaningful connections.
Right.
They're not making eye contact. And you are so invested in making those meaningful connections.
People said, why did you create something offline during a time where only technology is rising? I said, technology is a tool. And honestly, like, what is the tool is? It's like around connecting people. But
yeah. But Amy, look at the outpouring.
So where the pop culture comes back into it, there's so much data that says we experience things differently through a screen than we do face to face. What I love about Soup is that we use all five senses. You're seeing, you're hearing, you're feeling, because a lot of times you're sitting on a floor and that's uncomfortable and you're feeling, and it is an art practice, but I've disguised it in a way of community engagement. But you're using your feelings of uncomfortableness, and people try to take shortcuts of that all the time with Soup. And I've been okay with like letting it go, because you allow communities just to do whatever they feel that they need to do and how far they're willing to push themselves. But for Detroit, I wasn't going to give it up, because $5 was as much of a risk. I understand poverty levels in Detroit, so $5 might be too much for a lot of my neighbors. But it also was, $5 was enough of a risk for people outside of the city to feel like they were welcome to participate. They could give of themselves as well and be challenged.
And but what a beautiful thing for you to make this opportunity available to your neighbors, right?
Yeah.
That for $5, they can feel like they're contributing and giving back to the community.
Or we're helping us build it up together, right? I don't think we even not close understand how our communities are built. That, you know, just the fact that we barely even vote on a city council. And that honestly is the most important thing you can vote on is your city council, because that impacts you directly. And so what we've done is we've given all of our power away, and we get in these national elections and we raise all this money for something that honestly, we give all this power to this so far man. And instead, the most power we could do to change the worlds that we live in is in our state and where we live and where we vote. Are you voting? That's the biggest thing. Are you voting?
Yeah.
Yes, it's very scary to vote somebody that you don't know, but you're not mirroring them. They're only in there temporarily. They don't need to believe everything that you believe. We have to think critically about our black and white. If they're not all, then they get nothing. No, they might not believe everything I believe, but this one's a little bit more closer to how I think change happens than this one does. So I think about that because it's what we have to do. And I think it's the most American thing. And as a woman, it's the biggest gift that's ever been given to us. I don't think people understand the women who sacrifice their time, their lives, their having a family. Alice Paul was force-fed for her beliefs, arrested outside of the White House for practicing and demanding that her voice was heard. And that was my hero when I was a kid, surprise. And I carry her legacy. I carry her legacy because, and all of those women are her unnamed, who fought for me. I'm the one that they fought for. You're who they fought for. And if we don't do that, we're just saying that your sacrifice, we praise people all the time for things, and we should, but like, let's follow on and support and believe in their legacy. And it's only because it comes from, I was very conservative when I grew up. And now I am not, because of my experiences that challenged me, my beliefs, and by creating a space that allows for all voices to be heard whenever they're ready to share them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We only have about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Can we talk about some of your other fun projects?
Yeah, 100%.
I want to talk about you being a DJ.
Yeah,
I want to talk about 100%. Football, the DJ thing. How did that happen?
So funny enough, I had just moved back to Detroit. I actually had just moved in Detroit. So this is 2010. And my next door neighbor was a DJ. And I had just been invited to 14 weddings that year. I love love and I celebrate love and I officiate a lot of weddings, but I was not in a place to be married. And I'm still not yet working on that. And I say all that to say I wanted to do something for myself. I celebrated all these friends and I wanted to like learn how to do this. And we had the same birthday. And so we decided to throw a party. And my friend looked at me and he was like, you're actually really good at this. I'd love to have you do the next thing. And at the time, I was living a block away from the Woodbridge Pub and I was able to throw kind of some smaller events. Then my friend Sarah and I looked at each other after we had been invited to our friend who threw a birthday and she wanted all lady DJs. We showed up with our bags of records. We had almost all the same records. And we were like, wouldn't it be fun if we started this party called Nothing? We started a party at the Old Miami in downtown. And we'll do it the second Saturday. Well, coming up in the fall, we're going on 8 years of throwing the same party called Nothing Elegant, which was based off us finding a photo of Amelia Earhart in front of her plane that said Nothing Elegant. Amelia Earhart stands in front of her plane in her coveralls. And we're like, Nothing Elegant. That's such a great name.
Right.
Isn't it? Nothing Elegant. And it gets us off the hook for a lot of stuff. I don't want to perform. We like show up. We're like dirty half the time. Like, We're allowing people just to be. So much of what I do is I'm so good at creating.
Amy, you have the coolest opportunities.
But I've made them.
You have, no doubt. But I also feel like you have this like inherent power where you set the intention and then the opportunity.
Don't we all?
I would hope so.
I would hope. And that's the whole thing. Yeah. Is that I knew, and I've had these conversations. I happen to be the girl who had a gift, and this is who I am. And if we're going to use religious language, like, I do think this is my purpose on life. If like, I was just to be a girl who was going to be different, that was going to challenge norms, that so many women created opportunities, but there was still high grass. They mowed down the trees to like, now we have high grass. And I came out with a machete and I helped bring things down. Now I burnt out. I won't pretend that I didn't. But I had the opportunity because of DJing to take some time off and reset. I just would DJ parties and was able to pay my bills that way. And I'm proud of myself. Now, I'm farther behind than a lot of people my age, but
I don't know. I've seen your TED Talks.
But that was something I wanted. Yeah. Not everybody wants that. Uh-huh. Not everyone has the courage or the look. In eighth grade, I was in speech competitions and doing monologues. I'm not afraid to speak. I get so much stupid joy out of doing things like this. I'm great on a stage. I'm great when a microphone's in my hand. I become my person. Now, what do they say? Most people, the biggest fear is talking in public. That is not my biggest fear, right? So DJing just became an extension of not being afraid to say who I am and like live my truth and show other girls and women that they don't have to be what they always thought, which was small. You can be big. I am a big personality and I'm not ashamed to show it. Mm-hmm. And I love who I am and I'm different and I grasp it and I run with it and I own it. And I have the most fun when I can try to do it. I've also, when you have the highest highs, you have really low lows as well. I don't want to say my life is, it's just mine, period. It's not anyone else's because I'm not looking for anyone else to tell me how I should live it. I'm just living it. But it came through going through a tremendous loss too. The fear, I remember the day after my mom died, I remember lying in bed thinking the greatest fear that I ever had happened. And here I am, and I'm still here, and I'm still kind of kicking, and I'm just going to go for whatever I want to do. So when Soup kind of started, I was just like, let's do it. I'm not afraid. I want to talk about it. Let's go talk about it. And what are we afraid of? The no's hurt. Let's not pretend that they don't, but man, I don't know. All this stuff, here I am. Mm-hmm. Want to make some decisions differently? Probably. But DJing is just, I'm really good at it. I also like grew up playing percussion growing up.
Okay.
I was in the dance team. I like danced since I was a kid, so I could always find the beat.
Uh-huh.
And so I was always the kid at parties, always before there's all the kind of programs there are now. I was creating iTunes playlists so that we'd always have a good time. So when my friends that I used to know, like out in LA, would hear that I became a DJ, they'd be like, of course
of
you
course
are.
Of course you did.
Of course. Because you already were the DJ. Now you have a name.
Well, Amy, we're out of time. I adore you. Thank you for coming over and hanging out in the trailer.
Thank you so much for
everything
sharing.
You're doing. Don't stop.
Thank you. I won't.
Don't stop doing what you're doing because you're so important and you're changing so many lives. And I think you said, you know, you might be behind other people. I think people are looking at you and going, oh, I need to do more with my life because what you're doing is so important. Thank you for sharing everything
you're doing
with us. So hopefully you'll come back and keep us updated.
Oh, I would love to.
So many more questions
for you. Then we'll talk about it.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Amy.
This has been the Karma Has Spoken podcast. If you liked what you heard, feel free to share our show by email, social media, or any other means. If you've got a question, comment, or other feedback, visit our website at karmahasspoken.com. And keep up with Danielle by subscribing for free in your favorite podcast app. Just search Karma Has Spoken.